And now, Rachel Maddow. The host of The Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC has written a new book titled Drift, The Unmooring of American Military Power. It's about how we've been living in a state of perpetual war and how war has become more secretive and the public more disconnected from it. Well, Rachel Maddow, welcome to Up to Date. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, Steve, it's great to be here. Thank you.
What's the biggest effect of the public becoming more disconnected from war and from this idea of going to war, Rachel?
It's interesting to wonder whether or not us feeling the war less as civilians means that we're more tolerant of us going to war more often. You know, if it was more uncomfortable for us, would we be less tolerant of so many wars or wars that lasted so long? I actually think that's a little bit of an open question, but I'm inclined to think that we are, that when it's easier, you do more of it. But mostly I think that, you know, we've got a responsibility to uphold the constitutional inheritance that we've got as Americans, and we've been shirking it a little bit. And that is something that even if it didn't have immediate negative consequences for us, we still have the responsibility to do right by the country.
You know, given the changing technology in the way this country conducts war, can you ever foresee a day when we return to the draft again?
It's a really interesting question. You know, the draft, I don't think, is a magic wand. You look back at Vietnam, and when LBJ was trying to wage a war in Vietnam without upsetting the country too much, he thought that using the draft was a way that the country wouldn't notice it too much. He thought that if you called up the Guard and Reserves, that would be the upsetting thing, and the draft would be a way to have people not notice it much. So, you know, the last time we had the draft was the end of the Vietnam War, and that did not exactly mark a great moment for relations between civilian lives and military lives in our country. So I don't know that it would be a magic bullet, but the fact that so many people are interested in it itself, I think, is a symptom of how weirded out we are by how distant we are from the wars we're waging.
Can you envision the draft coming back? I mean, politically speaking, anytime the next decade or two?
The main reason I can't is because the military does not want it.
Hmm.
The military pretty much gets what it wants. A senior defense official told me for the book that the only fights the military loses with Congress is when Congress wants them to have something that the military doesn't want.
Yeah.
And so, right now they're fighting over tanks that Congress insists the Pentagon must take that are tanks the Pentagon doesn't want. It's the only part of our government that works that way at all. But, you know, the military is high-tech, high-pressure, high-turnover environment where they've got to be incredibly nimble, and they don't want to deal with people who don't want to be there.
We're visiting with Rachel Maddow. You know, if we don't ever return to a draft, how will citizens ever get this sense of involvement or connection with any war down the road?
That's sort of the question that it's at the heart of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are a number of different things that could be done to reverse what's happened. I think that it's not in our national interest that we've got a big part of our military capability that's secret. We're essentially using the CIA as a secret military right now.
Yeah.
I think we've changed the way that we wage war from Washington so that presidents are essentially seen as having the power to do it on their own rather than having to have Congress make the decision. And when Congress has to make the decision, they have big, raucous, out loud debates that tend to engage the whole country.
Hmm.
I think we also shouldn't be shielded from the casualties. Right now, we're sometimes literally shielded from the casualties.
Yeah.
We're not, during the Bush administration, we couldn't see them. But another way that we're shielded from that is by making sure that a big portion of the people who are deployed are working for private companies. They don't have to tell us when anybody gets hurt or gets killed, and we don't feel it the same way even when we find out about it. So there's all sorts of ways in which I think that we are shielded from it that we could take that away. We could go back to the way it was. It hasn't been this long that we've been going through these changes.
You know, I heard you on Fresh Air recently, and I was struck by the way you put your show together each day because you begin your day not knowing where you're headed that night.
Yeah.
Do I have that right?
Yeah, we are really, really irresponsible that way.
It's really flying by the seat of your pants, Rachel.
Yeah, we don't really book people in advance. We don't work. We sometimes work out multi-day stories, but pretty much it's a day-by-day thing, and it's a miracle every day when we go live at 9.
I mean, you make me nervous just describing it that way because we do a show here every day, and we plan out in advance and do all this stuff. But you're going every day fresh from square one.
Yeah, you know, I feel like as a 9 p.m. Eastern show, I sort of feel like I got a responsibility that I have to be on the day's news, and you don't know what the day's news is until you're there. But you also can't count on telling people stuff they don't know, because anybody who's been watching TV or paying attention to other news will know something. So you got to bring something new to the table based on what people will have already heard. So I do feel like there's sort of a responsibility to be planning day of every day, but it makes for a really high-pressure environment.
I was going to say, so how do you pull it together? How does a typical day tend to lay out?
Chaos. It's chaos from sun up to sundown. I'm in by about noon. Members of my staff are in even earlier. We start meeting. Everybody's reading all the time. We start meeting at about 2 o'clock, supposed to be 1:30. It's usually 2, where we start kind of narrowing down the universe of news and what we may want to talk about. Once we've figured out what we want to talk about, everybody fans out to do research and reporting and collecting elements. I write most of the segments myself. If I don't write them myself, I write them in conjunction with the segment producers who've been doing the reporting and the research on them. And we pull together 6 segments a night, and it's nuts. And every night at 8:45 p.m., I'm in a full-on sprint to the makeup room.
You said in that interview that sometimes you get to the interview, to the makeup room, and you don't even have your show completely put together yet.
It is frequent that the show is 90% done. And I'm never doing anything that I don't know about. I mean, I've made the decision about what every segment's going to be, and I'm only saying things that I believe and things that I know. But in terms of, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the scripts and all that stuff, I am hammering away through the commercial breaks right up until the very last minute that we're on the air. It's totally unsustainable. I'm not proud of this at all, I have to say. This is not a model for life.
How big is your staff?
You know, we have some overlap with some other shows and with the general news team here at MSNBC, but there's a couple dozen people here.
That helps.
Yeah, that really helps, especially because they're all wicked smart and they work really hard, too. I mean, this is I sort of feel like I've been loaned somebody's Ferrari to drive working with this staff.
I was going to say, you know, you began your career in radio. So what's the toughest thing about TV to you?
The difference between TV and radio is mostly, I think, the intimacy level. And I don't mean to sound creepy about that. But when you're in the radio, as you know, you're talking right into people's ears. Mm-hmm. It's an intimate thing. It's a one-on-one relationship. And when you're on TV, people are watching you on a screen across a room. And it's a cooler medium. And I think in some ways, I always thought that I was going to feel like a radio person lost in TV. I actually now feel like I might be better at TV than I was on the radio, because when I was on the radio, I used to write my show every day. Nobody does that in radio.
Right.
But I was writing it because I had arguments that I wanted to make and evidence that I wanted to lay out, something that I wanted to say. And I think that might work better on TV with a little distance between you and the viewer than it does on the radio. I'm not sure I was ever warm enough on the radio. I don't know that I'm the warmest person on earth, but I've been thinking more and more about that as I've been talking to people on the radio, actually, for this book.
We're talking to Rachel Maddow of MSNBC fame. She's the author of the new book, Drift, The Unmooring of American Military Power. You said recently that the interview you want most these days, Rachel, is Dick Cheney. Why?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to interview Dick Cheney for a long time, but for the book in particular, it's not so much post 9/11 Dick Cheney that I want to. It's not that those aren't the issues that I want to talk to him about. I want to talk to him about some other things he did that I think are really important. I want to know if he knew at the time how they were going to change the country. Two things in particular: after Iran-Contra, which was this huge scandal, the Reagan administration having done something illegal, they got caught for it. Their justification for it after they got caught was that the president, they had decided, had these huge, expansive powers that a president could do anything he wanted in national security, even if it was directly against a law that Congress had passed. And everybody in Congress was sort of horrified by this. They didn't much buy it. It was a big scandal at the time. But Dick Cheney at the time said, actually, I agree with this defense. I agree that the president can do anything in the national security field, even if it is against a law. And I want to know if at the time that he wrote that, because it ended up being a template for the way he went on in his political life. Did he know how radical that was?
Have you asked him for an interview?
A million times.
Okay.
I've expanded it that I will talk to any member of the Cheney family. But so far, I went to an event that Liz Cheney was at and waited on the rope line and shook her hand and asked her in person once. And yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
You even dedicated your book to him.
I was hoping that could be some leverage.
But then he had a heart. Unfortunately, he's going through a heart transplant and all
he
of that.
He is having a heart transplant. You know, the New York Daily News did a little thing on the little piece on the fact that I had dedicated the book to him, and then and then noted that he had not said yes to an interview, despite the fact that I'd asked him a lot. And then they said at the end of their article about it, "We hope he has a change of heart." And I was like, oh, no, you can't say that. He literally did just have a change of heart. You can't say that.
Who else is on your interview wish list?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I think a lot about people who have made decisions that that ended up changing the country. I would really like to interview Hillary Clinton about the differences between how she saw the world as a first lady, how she saw the world as a presidential candidate, and how she sees the world now as a Secretary of State.
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't anybody else in our history who is like Hillary Clinton and who has seen things from that many different perspectives. I'd love to talk to her. You know, frankly, if you want to get weird, I'd love to talk to Mullah Omar. You know, I'd love to talk to some of our some of these enigmatic people in the world who have changed America by virtue of their projects, by what they want to get done in the world. I mean, he's the, you know, the guy who was the head of the Afghan Taliban is now in exile in Pakistan. The Taliban has completely changed into this other thing. He's still seen as this guy who's the key to whether or not to American reconciliation there. So I'd love to talk to some bad guys as well as some good guys, but that's all. That's fantasy talk show host talking.
But Rachel, one final question. Your broadcast career began at WRNX in Holyoke, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
After you entered and won a contest the station held to find a new on-air personality. Is that how this career began, really, in broadcast?
On-air contest. I got hired on the spot and started the next day. I never thought I was going to be in media. I never even had an inkling toward it. And once I started doing it, I found out that I loved it.
What did you do that impressed people so much that day?
You know, I don't think I was that impressive. I think, you know, I had been doing a bunch of odd jobs. I was trying to finish my dissertation. I was working weird jobs just to pay the rent. And the host is a guy named Dave Brunell, Dave in the Morning. He said to me, "So what are you doing for work now?" And I said, "I'm unloading trucks." And he said, "Where are you unloading them from?" And I said, "Bigger trucks." And he said, "You're hired."
So you're kidding.
I think I mostly got hired because I got the joke.
Rachel, I sure enjoyed having you. All the best.
Steve, thank you so much. I'm really, really looking forward to being out in Kansas City. Thanks a lot.
That's Rachel Maddow of MSNBC. Rachel Maddow appears on Sunday, April 22nd at 2 o'clock. For tickets, call the Uptown Theater, 816-753-8665. Again, 816-753-8665. You'll find guest bios, archives, and podcasts of our programs at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, veterinarian Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is back. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Kim Doble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.